October seminar in a series of seminars sponsored by the Education Employers Task Force and the Centre for Education and Industry at the University of Warwick. Our theme today is an analysis of the impacts of a specific programme of study which has been sort of in place for a number of years, and we have a really robust interrogation of what that programme of study, which includes a number of very interesting aspects around career exploration and employer engagement, tells us about the outcomes for young people who took part in it. Our two speakers today are Professor David James and Neil Harrison, who come from the University of Cardiff and the University of West of England, and I will leave it to you, David.
Thank you very much indeed. Delighted to be here. Thanks for coming. I'd like to start by giving you a bit of background to the thing we're studying, and I'll necessarily skate over a bit of detail to do that. But first of all, the Certificate of Personal Effectiveness is offered by ASDAN, which, as most of you will know, stands for the Award Scheme Development and Accreditation Network. It's a skills-led qualification. It's modular. It's available at levels 1, 2, and 3. What we're interested in here today is the level 2 part of ASDAN COPE, which many students take alongside other things at Key Stage 4, essentially. Okay, it's based around modules. These promote learning through undertaking challenges. The whole conception of this curriculum and its pedagogy, if you like, is around challenges. And a process, plan, do, review, and the building of portfolios. And we've decided to draw attention there to some recent work that somebody else has done. Chris Watkins at the Institute of Education has recently argued very coherently on the basis of a meta-analysis that what he calls a learning orientation is somewhat under threat across particularly secondary schools in England. A learning orientation as opposed to a performance orientation, and a performance orientation is one that focuses on outcomes exclusively. And I think that's an important part of context here. The modules that people do as part, the students do as part of ASDAN COPE, include some that are explicitly work-related. There's one called Work-Based Learning and Enterprise. There's another called Vocational Preparation. But it's also true to say that amongst all the modules, pretty much all the modules, it's possible and quite frequent that young people attempt challenges that relate to the world of work, that have some connection with either workplaces or work or the skills perhaps one would associate with work. And wider key skills run through all the modules as well. So it's learner-centred, this entity. It draws on personal interests, innovative curriculum and mainstream schoolwork. And just to illustrate what that means, in some of the perhaps more spectacular examples of drawing on personal interests, a young learner might make their interest, their passion indeed, for whatever it is. One of my favourite examples would be fixing motorbikes. Somebody might make that passion the centre of quite a bit of their curriculum for a time and explore all sorts of things, achieve all sorts of learning through challenges based around that passion. Personal interest can take many forms, of course, you know, there are many examples of that we came across in the data. Innovative curriculum an example of that would be getting young people to organise all of the catering when there's an Ofsted. An Ofsted visit is something that many schools experience. We came across an example of where the young people had taken care of the logistics side of that and had written it up, had recorded the process and recognised their own learning on the result. And then mainstream schoolwork, as ASDAN COPE is often bound up with making, as it were, more sense of mainstream schoolwork or finding coherence and relationships between various bits of mainstream schoolwork. I've already mentioned that it's available at these levels. This study is focused on level 2 and usually taken at Key Stage 4, currently equivalent to a grade B at GCSE. ASDAM COVE is offered across around 1,000 scores. There's around 10,000 young people completing it each year. And there's a wide variety of young people taking COPE. Although it's true to say that pupils with lower measured ability on free school meals and with special educational needs are overrepresented if you look at the sample as a whole. I mean, I wouldn't want to overemphasize that because it's genuinely a comprehensive qualification in that sense. And worth mentioning that in our study of schools, we distinguish in both our in our analysis and in our findings between two broad kinds of use of ASDAM COPE. I have to say there's quite a bit of variety in the way that it's delivered, in the way it's interpreted locally, but some themes in that. Essentially, we distinguish between thin schools, where ASDAM COPE is used mainly as a supplement for a small minority of people with, for one reason or another, disrupted education between Key Stage 3 and 4. Some examples there. And on the other hand, wide schools, for want of a better term perhaps, but schools where COPE is used widely, that is, where it's a more mainstream tool, either to enhance the curriculum as a whole, or to increase motivation of pupils, or to broaden opportunities for achievement across many or most of the perhaps of the students in a school. And that distinction is based on something in the, in our quantitative data. We set the boundary at 25%. Schools, you know, where 25% under or over were following COPE.
Okay, over to me. In terms of this study, we used what we call a mixed methods approach to the research, drawing on a range of quantitative and qualitative methods, and three main strands to that work, and we'll deal mainly with the first strand, with a little bit of the second, and then a little bit of the third as well in terms of today's presentation. The first strand was an analysis of data from the National Pupil Database, which is available to researchers, records a vast array of data about all young people who are going through the school system. And we particularly focused on those who are completing Key Stage 4 in 2010, of which there are just over 500,000 of them. So a very, very large data set which we were given access to. We also looked at the data for those from 2009 and 2011 as well, but they weren't in any way particularly different, so we just focused really in on 1 year. The second strand was what is called a quasi-experimental study, and what we did there, and we'll come on to explain this a little bit more, is we created two imaginary schools, one of people who take COPE and one of people who don't take COPE, and then we looked at the difference in those two schools. And finally, we undertook four research visits within schools that were delivering COPE. Three of them were thin and one was wide, in terms of the definitions that David just laid out. And there we talked to the young people themselves, we talked to teaching staff, we talked to school managers, and also learning tutors and other adults within the classroom setting. So we're getting on to the science bit, as they used to say, so forgive me for those of you who aren't necessarily more that comfortable with this type of content, but I'll try and explain it as I go through. For the analysis of the National Pupil Database data, we used a technique called multi-level binary logistic regression. You won't be tested on this later, I promise. But what that effectively does is it enables us to look at a range of different variables that might begin to explain a young person's outcomes at Key Stage 4. And the real gift of this technique is it enables us to look at each one of those factors in isolation. So we're able to control for other variables whilst we're looking at COPE. We're also able to look at different variables both by school and by individual as well. And I'll come on to explain that a little bit more in a second. But what we looked at were four measures of outcome. For young people at Key Stage 4, particularly on their GCSE English, because it was felt that this was an obvious connection between COPE and ability in that area. but also at this threshold which has gained currency over recent years around having five good GCSE passes at A star to C, including English and maths. So we'll what I'll quickly do now is I'll run through the impact of taking COPE on those four measures of outcome. I'll also look at very briefly at how the other factors, the other variables that we looked at, contribute to that picture as well. But obviously that isn't the main thrust of our presentation today. And just to reiterate this, this issue about multi-level, we were able to look at issues that were relating to the school, and we particularly looked at the school attainment as a whole. We also looked at school deprivation in terms of the neighbourhood being served by that school, and also the wide, thin or none COPE usage within the school. And then looking down at individual learners, we were able to look at these variables here. So they're key stage three outcomes in English: gender, free school meals, special educational needs, whether or not they have English as a secondary language, ethnicity, whether or not they were persistent absentee during key stage three, and then finally, obviously, whether or not they were taking COPE themselves. So we've got a really, really rich array of data there, of factors that might begin to explain why a young person achieves the results that they do at key stage four. So running through these one at a time. First, with GCSE passes at A star to G, what we found was that in both thin and wide schools, taking COPE is associated with a significantly higher likelihood of a young person achieving an A star to G pass, a pass at all. underneath there, as I say, I won't spend a lot of time on this, but we'll obviously answer questions on this later if you wish, are the other factors and how they impact it. So obviously, those with high key stage 3 English outcomes were more likely to get a pass. Women were more likely, students from BME backgrounds, those who had English as a secondary language, perhaps counterintuitively there, and those with a high school English and maths pass rate also were more likely to achieve a pass themselves. And obviously the negative outcomes, negative factors there as well: free school meals, special educational needs, and so on. So moving on then to this, the threshold of a good pass, as is often conceptualised in terms of league tables and so on. In the wide schools, and this is where this distinction between thin and wide becomes important, in wide schools COPE is associated with a significantly higher likelihood of a young person achieving A star to C in their GCSE English. Whereas in thin schools, it was associated with a significantly lower likelihood. And that's something we'll come back to in a second. There's very, very good reasons for that difference between the two. Remember that in wide schools, this is where COPE is being used across a large part of the cohort of young people. In some instances, up to 80, 90 or even 100% of young people within the school. Whereas in the thin schools, it's much more rarefied, much more self-contained group of young people. So just to stress this again, in those schools where COPE is used across a wide part of the cohort, they are significantly more likely to achieve a good pass at GCSE English. And there are different ways of quantifying that, but it's around a 10% increased likelihood. And this is a sort of graphical representation of this. I'm always a bit suspicious about putting the graphs up because they are an approximation of the statistical methods, because you can't demonstrate eight-dimensional space on a slide. But this is two-dimensional space, and that will do for the time being. On the left-hand side here, we have schools not offering COPE. Then those that offer COPE are wide usage, but where the young people are not taking it themselves. And on the right, it's wide usage where young people are actually taking COPE. And the three different coloured bars there are key stage three attainment in English. And effectively, what you can see here, if you focus for a second on the blue bars, that the pass rate in a wide usage school amongst those people taking COPE is approaching 22%. But if you compare that over here with otherwise similar young people in the no COPE school at 13%, you can see there's really quite a difference there in terms of their pass rates. Similarly, the red bars, 73%, 71%, and the green bar, which are our high achievers, even there is a difference between being in a COPE school and a no COPE school. Okay. So moving on to very high achievers in terms of GCSE English, so those people getting an A star or an A. What we found there was that actually COPE has a non-significant relationship with the likelihood of achieving a pass at that level in a wide school, and again a significantly lower likelihood within the thin schools. Similar set of predictors at the bottom there again. And then we move on to the other measure that we particularly thought was interesting, which is the five GCSE passes, including English and Maths. And we see a similar pattern there, that within the wide schools, COPE is associated with a significantly higher likelihood. In this instance, it was about 5% higher. And in the thin schools, again, associated with a lower likelihood. And again, very similar group of predictor variables listed at the bottom there. So again, very interesting finding there, where COPE is being used across a wide cross-section of the school population. So that was the data from the National Pupil Database, the 500,000 records. Oh, sorry, I've got one more slide. Another one of my slightly suspect graphs that are only in two dimensions. But a very similar picture here, again, focusing on the blue bar here, a 10% pass rate in wide schools where people are taking COPE compared to 6.7% in the no COPE school. And a big difference within the school as well. So the 10% where the young person was taking COPE compared to only 4% within those within effectively the same school where the young person wasn't taking COPE. And again, similar difference there as well. Okay, so the second analysis that we did was this paired sample analysis. And what we did is we randomly selected 200 of the young people that had taken COPE from the National Pupil Database data. And then we matched them with 200 people who had not taken COPE. And we matched them on a range of the different variables, the ones that we've already outlined there. So effectively what we did was created two imaginary schools that were identical in terms of their in terms of the demographics, in terms of their population, but the difference was that in one school everyone took COPE and in one school no one took COPE. And that gives us a very interesting way to look at differences, and it's in some ways a more robust approach to the analysis. So again, if you can imagine, you've got 200 young people in the school, and you can end up with quite nice little pictures like this. So on the left with all the smiley faces, these are people who passed their GCSE English at A star to C. And on the left hand side, the blue smiley faces are the people in the no COPE school. And 132 of them passed their English with an A star to C grade. But over in the COPE school, 150 passed. So it was 18 more people out of the school of 200 who passed. That may seem like a relatively small number, but it's a statistically significant difference. And actually, it's actually quite a wide gap in terms of the numbers that you're talking about. It's an extra 18 people who were able to achieve their pass in English. And this use of a quasi-experimental study, as I say, is a more robust way of looking at things because it approaches the rigour of an experimental study with control groups and so on. And it's a very good way of retrospectively constructing control groups in terms of quantitative analysis. The COPE school outperformed the non-COPE school across all measures. There was a mix of significant and non-significant effects, as you would expect with a relatively small sample. When you look at it across the piece, there was an average uplift of 1/5 of a grade for those young people taking COPE. But for some, it was much higher. It was in the order of 2 or 3 grades more than their pair. So quite interesting there. So, interpretation of the findings. In thin schools, going back to where we started, the COPE is directed towards those learners where the school is expecting them to severely underperform relative to their ability as measured at Key Stage 3. They're people who've had disrupted education. We met one young woman who had a brain tumour, for example, and obviously had missed a lot of school, was running behind. Had the ability, but had had a disruption. We also came across people who had a history of absenteeism, people who had had difficult home lives, and those sort of circumstances. But in terms of this data, whereas the young people in thin schools were underperforming relative to those people in other schools, they were still being more likely to take the exam and to get a better mid-range pass than would otherwise be expected. And in terms of talking to the schools, what the teachers and indeed the pupils themselves widely felt that the COPE had helped to mitigate the disadvantages that they had undergone. So they had fallen behind, but COPE was helping them to catch up. So that begins to explain the data that we see there. In terms of the wide schools, it's much easier to interpret. Across the board, COPE is associated with better A star to C pass rates. And the only place where we found there wasn't a significant effect in statistical terms was at the very top, the A star to A, where you might imagine that actually the sort of skills, the academic and key skills that young people are developing through COPE are not as important as a good working knowledge of King Lear or Othello, which is what is going to get you an A star in your English. So that was the one instance where there wasn't an effect. But both that, in terms of focusing on GCSE English, but also looking at the 5 GCSE measure, COPE was associated with an increased likelihood of passing. And we did a bit of drilling down to look at where the effects were greatest. And this is covered in the main report, but just to whip through here. The effect, the size of the effect from COPE was stronger for those with special educational needs, those who were receiving free school meals, and those from minority ethnic communities, and in particular those with English as a second or subsidiary language, which is very interesting indeed. And we concluded this suggests that COPE has a particular role in challenging educational disadvantage. Interestingly, there was no connection between COPE and gender, which was something that we expected to find from on the basis of the visits that we did to schools, but actually the statistics didn't pull out. So I think it's over to you now, David.
Good, thank you very much. Just to underline, the mixed methods aspect of this study is very important. And you would have noticed there perhaps that for example, in the analysis from the National Pupil Database showed approximately a 10% uplift in higher grade GCSEs in English. And then when you do the matched pair, the imaginary schools, you get about the same result, 18 cases in 200, so about 9%. Very interesting. So it's also interesting for other reasons, but we probably won't have time to go into those. Why does COPE work? Well, the annoying thing perhaps here is that the kind of statistical analysis we've done does not lead you, and nor could it, to a completely watertight causal explanation of one thing causing another. In fact, in the world of statistics, that is so rare in any walk of life, be it the hard sciences or the soft sciences or anywhere else, that it's actually it's not such a problem after all. It's not such a shame that we can't say that. However, we do have rich qualitative data from the case study schools, which is very helpful in this regard. Although there's only a small number of them, that bit of data gathering enables us to get really close to experiences, to often years of experience actually, and impressions from students particularly, and tutors and curriculum managers, which we arrived at independently, incidentally, those three groups, and to put together some of those with the data that you've just heard described. And from those examples, we would like to suggest there are three possible mechanisms going on here. We think there's strong evidence for a highly probable causal relationship. So it's highly probable that the presence of COPE is in some way having a positive and direct impact on GCSE outcomes. We think there are possibly three mechanisms to do that. One is, and this is drawing directly on what we saw and what people told us about their experience over some years. It's possible there's a transferability of skills from COPE to GCSEs, especially in written communication. Actually, not only though in written communication, the whole way of organising your school life, which comes with COPE or can come with it, would, it seems, be a very useful toolkit for some students to, as it were, cope with their GCSE subjects. So there's a sort of possibility of transfer there on the sort of process front. Second possible mechanism increased motivation. We saw examples of this too, learners actively enjoying COPE and this engaging them with other learning. We had some terrific examples of that actually, from not directly from teachers, but teachers reporting parents who were highly sceptical of this when the kids started to do it, but by the end of a year or two were saying, this has saved my child's education, thank you very much. And sorry, I was sceptical, one of them said. Last possible mechanism, the use of wider knowledge and activity base. It's possible that the use of a wider knowledge and activity base increases confidence and self-esteem. It connects school to lived lives. I've recently, in another completely different project, come across a very large secondary school somewhere in England where the students were telling me that most of their school doesn't connect at all with the rest of their lives, not even in the ways you'd think it would, you know, in the locality or whatever. And I think that's a really big problem in perhaps secondary education at the moment. So these are possible mechanisms that we like to offer. And then finally, the question, why does it matter? The sort of so what question. Well, we think it matters enormously, this work. First of all, first point to make here is that COPE is caught up in the current, this is my phrase, bonfire of the vocationals. The loss of official equivalence with GCSE, which COPE has experienced recently, will mean schools are much less likely to offer it. And schools told us this. They said, we think COPE is great, we love the methodology, but actually if it doesn't count anymore in league tables, we'll probably stop doing it and we'll find something else. Now, I think some of them will and some of them won't stop, by the way, but I think that's a very strongly held view. And I think that whilst we're on that point, I would like to mention that if you actually look at Alison Wolfe's recommendations, for example, recommendation one, she says the DfE should distinguish clearly between those qualifications, both vocational and academic, which can contribute to performance indicators at Key Stage 4 and those which cannot. The decision criteria should be explicit and public, and then goes on to say what the considerations should include. And our view would be that hasn't been done. The consideration of this qualification before deciding whether it counts in performance measures of Key Stage 4 has not been done, or at least nothing exists before our work. So the decision seems to have been made without that work. Thus, finally, we have the loss of a learning process that appears to help a large number of pupils gain better GCSEs, incidentally regarded by some, perhaps many, as a prime indicator of the labour supply of skills, you know, if you look at the Leach Review, more than anything, that is an indicator of where one is with that supply of skills. And then secondly, we have the loss of an explicit work-related opportunity for many pupils, at the same time as the removal of the statutory requirement for work-related learning for that age group. It's sort of moved up recently. So that's about all we've got to say for the moment, but we'd be very pleased to have questions and discussion on the back of it. Thank you very much.